Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to Maths Hysteria, a podcast all about Married at First Sight with me, Omar Abid. And today we're talking to one of the most popular participants, I would say. Off air, she's been very humble about it, but we'll come to that. Zoe, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to be here. I've been waiting to come on this podcast.
Really?
Yeah, I've been excited. I've been listening every day. I'm like, when are they going to ask me? God, how long do I have to wait? You kept me waiting there, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Keep your Save the best till last.
Yeah, exactly. we're really excited to talk to you because genuinely, the response for everything we put up about you on social media would always get huge numbers because people just seem to love you.
That's really good. It's nice to hear. I think like a lot of my friends and family, they'll say the same thing, but then obviously they're biased. And no one's going to go to someone that's like my mom and be like, oh, I hate Zoe. So obviously I'm hearing all of these nice things, but they're from people that are, you know, biased because they love me.
See, already, and you kind of said this before we started recording, that you seem quite cynical about it to me, that you sort of don't believe the response.
Yeah, I think it has a lot as well to do with, I've said before that you can have like 100 nice messages that will boost you like, say 2%, and then you get one really horrible message. And it has such an impact, and I don't know why it works like that, and it's horrible that it does, but it has, the nasty comments seem to have a really big impact, which is so annoying. Mm-hmm. And especially, I think, just that, like lately towards the end of the show, I think once I started speaking up as well, which I'm sure we'll get to, people had a lot more negative things to say, I guess.
Being direct about it, were a lot of the negative comments homophobic?
Some of them, especially in the last week, I've had a lot of homophobic comments, and a lot of people just, they don't write on posts. A lot of them are going straight to your DMs, which I think, like I've tried to, obviously I work full time and it's difficult because you do get a lot of messages, but somebody's taking the time out of the day to send me a really nice message. This is kind of short lived for me. So I want to show them my appreciation, show them that I've read it and say thanks. Mm-hmm. But then what goes alongside that is you get, and they don't just say like, you know, they won't just say something nasty. They'll go in. I mean, they're like really nasty, horrible things to read, which I can't understand why people are so horrible, so mean. So mean.
Why can't you just be nice?
Exactly, just be nice. I don't say anything. I just, you know, it's just a cruel, what a cruel world, like some of the things. But then, you know, on the flip side, I've got, I've had so much support, and I've had so, it's completely outweighed, you know, it's like 95% love. So I've had an easy ride.
Yeah, well, just to give you a bit of, I mean, sure, not that you need it from me, but to give you a bit of reassurance, like the biggest tweets we've had, we've been doing this 2 years, the biggest tweets we've had have been stuff that you've said. And it's not even been that I've written anything funny, which, you know, I'm hilarious. But, but all I did was just write what you said and put the hashtag and a photo, and they've got like thousands and thousands of likes. So, you know, people really enjoyed watching you. Are you, coming back to something you said there, are you glad that it's short-lived?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I'm kind of like, you know, I think, nothing against anybody else that went on the show, but I kind of said all the way through, I'm not in it for fame, really. I'm not, you know, there's obviously some positives that can come off the back of this. And there could be an opportunity that would be too good to miss. But for me, I was there for the right reasons. And also, like, this is a lot. It's a lot of pressure. And it's a lot. I think I underestimated it, really. So I am kind of glad that it is short-lived. But it is nice.
Yeah, of course. When did it kick in that you thought, this is going to be more than I thought?
I think when it initially got announced, it was fine, because like not many people kind of knew. But then when it went onto TV, it was like phases, I think. It's like, I always see it as like phases. So when you've applied for it and then you find out that you're going on, you've got that anxiety. Then the anxiety of, oh my God, who am I going to be paired with? You've then got that next phase of anxiety. Then how is this going to work on the show? Mm-hmm. And then you've got the next bit is like of, it's going to get announced. And then it gets announced. So you just go through different levels of anxiety for different reasons, you know, because you're exposing yourself when it's being recorded, and you're like, oh, what did I say then? And then you forget about it all. And then it's the weird part in between of, like, which I'm sure everybody will agree. You all just go home after it's been filmed. And then you just go back to work. You just go back to your normal life, and no one knows that you've gone through this crazy thing, and you have like a few months of nothing. And then all of a sudden it comes on, and that's when it hit me, I think, that it's very time consuming, I think. And it's, everyone's just tired. You're just tired.
Yeah. And that's never good for when you're in a heightened state with your emotions anyway. Like, just because it's sort of like work, I guess, like talking to other people that you're doing 12 hour days, 14 hour days in filming, and it's obviously high stress.
Intense. And it's the working full time as well, I think, like work. And then it's kind of like you're living two lives, because you're at work, and I work in construction. So literally, like, hardly, and no one at work really knows, like, they know, but they don't watch it. So you just, everyone forget. And then you finish work and you come out, and then you're in this completely different world. It's like, it's weird, it's bizarre.
Well, I actually think, I'm not surprised that you said you're glad that it's short-lived, because I actually think that's part of the reason that people like you, is because you can tell you're not in it for Instagram followers and everything.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Because people want to see a genuine person who's looking to find somebody. And normally, my follow-up question is normally, what made you go onto the show? But I think I can answer that, because I'm guessing that the gay scene in Stafford isn't thriving.
No, it's not. I mean, I had about 1,000 messages when I said that there was only 5 lesbians in Stafford. But I mean, a few more have come out of the pod work, but I probably 10 max. But it's not only meeting, you know, if you walk into a bar, all of those women there are probably going to be straight, which means, you know, you've got the chance that one of them could be, you know, your chances are higher. If I go in a bar, I've got hardly any of them are going to be lesbian or bisexual. And then also they've got to be into you and you've got to be into them. So it's just way harder.
So you took the gamble of going on national
exactly.
telly.
Yeah, so took the gamble.
So let's get to the wedding then. I mean, it looked like a kind of dream start, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. I just knew, I think, I was scared that I was going to be with somebody that was like me, because I thought really the experts, did they have a knowledge around, like, if I say that I don't like somebody that's masculine, are they really going to take that on board? Or are they going to say, I've given you what you need, not what you want? So I was thinking, oh, I thought I was going to be with somebody wearing a tux. And I know that Jenna was thinking she was going to be matched with somebody that's wearing a dress. And I remember saying, am I going to be waiting for them? And they were like, yeah. And I thought, oh. And then when I turned around, obviously I was, well, you can see on my face, I was relieved. But I just got a sense of, like, she was just very respectful straight away. We just had a mutual level of respect for each other. So I knew that she wasn't going to be walking out saying, this isn't what I signed up for. She respected me and I respected her. So I knew that no matter what happened, we were both just, like, decent people.
Yeah, I guess it's good to have that feeling, isn't it? Because then you know that, like, you're meeting someone, like I've just said about you, that's there for the right reasons. And you, yeah, you can tell straight away that she's, yeah, there for that as well. Then it makes it easier to kind of, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a romantic spark, but would... The respect aside, did you think, like, romantically this has got legs?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we just, yeah, because I was obviously initially attracted to her straight away. And but you don't really get to know each other, really, because you're just, like, dragged, oh, can you have pictures? Oh, can you sit down for this meal? And then, oh, can you have this chat? And then before you know it, it's 3 a.m. and we've just got to go to bed, got 2 hours sleep before the honeymoon. So we knew the initial attraction was there for both of us, and we were both just kind of holding on to each other. So then it wasn't until the honeymoon, I guess, that we really started to get to know each other, mm-hmm, and have that time to be able to do that.
Well, before we get to the honeymoon, I mean, probably we've been talking now for about 10 minutes and had to come up sooner or later. What's your favourite type of egg?
Listen, let me just clear the air with this, because I get so many questions. How do you not know vegans have eggs? But it was the realisation that obviously straight away I thought about dairy. And I was thinking, oh, cheese and milk. And then I was like, just can't have eggs. I was thinking, like, all of the wonderful things that eggs go into, like pancakes, cakes. Then I was thinking scrambled egg, poached egg. Like, all of the different types of eggs, and you're missing out on them. It actually made me sad. And then I was thinking, well, she got a problem with me having eggs. Because I have literally, for my birthday, my mom got me an egg cooker. So when I'm at work, this is my one gift I ask for. An egg cooker, I can have poached egg, an omelette, or a boiled egg, because I wanted egg and soldiers at work. And that's what I asked for. But I don't tell anybody this. That's what I do now. Yeah. That's how much I love eggs.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, when I asked you that, I thought you were just going to say, oh, this has been totally blown out of proportion. It's fine. It's funny and everything. No, you actually...
I'm passionate about eggs. I've got a real passion.
Yeah, well, clearly. And it was kind of... blown up out of proportion, wasn't it? The whole veganism thing. Talking to other, yeah, participants and everything, it seems to be because they have to find a storyline somewhere.
Yeah. The vegan thing was, it's difficult because it was kind of blown out of proportion, but it was also, I felt like this story, that wasn't necessarily what the story was. So I think it was like, Jenna owns a zero waste shop. She doesn't buy like new clothes. She lives her entire life around like a zero waste lifestyle, mm-hmm, which is absolutely incredible that she wants to make the world a better place. But for somebody like me to come into that, I kind of felt at first judged for how I live my life. And then I felt judged for, and I was trying to wrap my head around it. So it was quite a big thing, but it wasn't just about her diet. It was about her lifestyle as a whole. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that I was kind of on the defensive. She didn't necessarily have a problem with me ordering meat. I assumed that she had a problem and then made a thing of it.
Right. Okay. I was just going to ask you, like, did she actually do anything? Because I quite quickly felt like Jenna got the short end of the stick, because, yeah, did she actually really do that much? As you got to know her, it seemed unlikely that she was going to start hassling you. You know, I'm sure she would prefer that you didn't eat eggs or,
yeah,
didn't get the steak or whatever. But was she actually doing that much? Because I think I'd be the same as you. Like, yeah, I get it. Well done. Genuinely. That's really good. I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm everybody's got their own things that they care about. And you can't sort of care about everything equally, because some stuff, yeah, just matters more to you than others. And that's such a radical change in your lifestyle.
Yeah. But she didn't. I mean, when we watched The Honeymoon back, there was a couple of things that she said. And I thought, I knew she wanted me to be vegan. I watched a few things back, and I'm not sure she would have preferred. And I was like, I knew she said that. But then in reality, I think the main problem wasn't necessarily her. It was me. I was very conscious that it seemed like I was being disrespectful by ordering meat or drinking out of a plastic bottle. Or it was a me problem more so right. than a Jenna problem, I think. But we, you know, I think we overcame it, and it made us stronger. But they really honed in on the vegan thing. And I remember we had a meal and we had an argument about it again. It just came out of nowhere. And then I remember following them out that day. And I said, enough, nah, we're not talking about it anymore. It's done. That's the last time we talk about it. And to be fair, we never spoke about it again. She just doesn't eat meat and dairy, and I do. That's it.
It's almost such a big change, difference between you, that in a way it's quite easy to fix. Like, because you on our social media, you could sense people were like starting to think, like, all right, it's not this big a deal that it's being made out to be on the TV program, you know.
And it wasn't that much of a big deal, but I think also we were getting on really well. Everything was going quite well. And so, you know, equally, you don't really want to be the boring couple that are just going like, oh yeah, everything's great. So, you know, they had to find a problem and they found one. So,
Did you enjoy the honeymoon? It looked cold.
It was freezing cold. And then Jenna obviously got corona, which was a nightmare. We got split up. And then also when we were on the honeymoon, so we'd been there, luckily, I think it was the day before the last day. And then it was just me and her, the two camera people that were with us, they went home, and someone from welfare came out. But there wasn't any room service. So then they were like, oh, you're going to have to sort because I didn't have it. So then I had to go out, and I was thinking, I didn't even know what a vegan was. I obviously didn't know they couldn't have eggs. How the hell am I supposed to shop for vegan food when it's all in a different language? I was just in the shop, like, no one spoke English. It was the most stressful thing ever. But
you just came back with a basket full of carrots,
broccoli, vegetables, you know, you used to eat with vegetables, raw potatoes, and a bottle of water.
So actually, before we come back to the kind of the timeline of it, we spoke to Adrian, and with the same-sex couples, we asked him about, and it's something he wanted to bring up and clear up. How did you decide who went on what? Who went with the stags? Who went with the hens? Was that left up to you?
I when they did my backstory, which is probably about a month or two before you do the stag and hen do's, I said to them, I was like, I will be with the guys, won't I? And they said they wouldn't want to make that assumption. So you need to make sure that you request it. So I rang and requested. I mean, that would be my idea of hell going with all the brides. So I'm so glad. I mean, I love some of the girls, but that would have been, I would have just been like, this is too stressful. All of these women and Thomas just arguing. I wouldn't have to deal with it. So thank God I put the request in.
What was it like then when you come back and you're meeting everyone? Because I think that's an overwhelming situation, really. Like, just to meet a whole group of new people at once, and there are all these expectations about where you might be in your relationship compared to them as well.
So the first, I had to walk in on my own, didn't I? Because Jenna had grown. So with the stags, they sent me in last, which to walk in with all of the men is, I remember standing around the corner, I could hear them all laughing. And there was one of the crew were there, and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And she was like, because she was gay, she was like, you're doing it for the lesbians. No, go. I was like, then I had to run down and just pretend I was all confident, which I wasn't. And then they sent me in a dinner party on my own again. Big lesbo reveal twice.
Well, at that stag do then, were any of the lads like particularly like come and get you and get you involved in the group and everything?
It was just like I was just one of them. It wasn't any different. And throughout, I would say this about all of them. They never ever treated me like I was any different. So I suppose it's credit to them, I guess, because there was never a second where I felt like I was any different. And I'm sure Adrian would say the same, being a gay guy, which, you know, I'm sure in like with a load of straight men, sometimes it can be. But then again, I'm working construction, Dana, so I suppose I've got I'm surrounded by men anyway. It's my, that's what I'm used to. That's home for me.
Adrian actually said when we were talking about it, he said, oh, the reality is after a while, I just wanted to go wherever Zoe was. So that's nice.
Me and Adrian just stuck together with a glass of red wine and walked around all the apartments for the last few weeks. We just had enough. That was it. It's true.
Was that the thing you struggled with the most then, the drama?
I think I struggled with, I'm independent. I lived on my own. And I was always in control of my life. So I did what I wanted with who I wanted, whenever I wanted, really. And I think having that control taken away from you, somebody saying, you need to be here at this time, or like that, that's what I struggled with. I struggled with having no control over my life, no phone, and being forced into these situations where there's drama, when usually I'd be like, I'm not getting involved in that. We had no choice. I think that's what I struggled with, not having control over my life.
And it seemed like there was drama fairly early on. I mean, yeah. I think the first thing was the who was bitching about Shanita in the toilets, and then that kicked off yeah. at a dinner party. Those yeah. dinner parties, I've heard they take a long, long time. Like you've just kind of said about the, you know, the time demands on you, and you're stuck in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, there's these dinner parties, sometimes you get picked up at 8:30 in the morning. You won't get home till like 11:30 on the night, 12 o'clock. And then if somebody's leaving, you've obviously got to have a party. So then you're up till late. And then they're like, oh, we're picking you up at 8:00. So you just like, it's a lot. But they're enjoyable at the same time. It's tiring, but it was amazing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you did have the best. You're surrounded by a load of amazing characters. The crew were hilarious as well. So, you know, it was... tiring, mm-hmm. but you were having an amazing time.
After the initial, you know, we've talked about the veganism and everything, and that storyline was kind of done.
Yeah.
The next stumbling block seemed to be at a commitment ceremony where Jenna felt a bit blindsided, because you were saying that although you have a good time, you have a laugh, it's not the proper belly laughs and things like that. And it felt like she didn't know that you were feeling that way. And you could tell you were quite anxious about saying it on there. What was it from your point of view?
I think like we'd had a good week, and when we sat down on the sofa, it wasn't something that I thought, right, I'm gonna wait till I'm there and I'm not gonna say anything, and then I'm gonna just say all this thing that I haven't spoken to Jenna about. We'd said everything's good, and they said, is there anything that you would want to improve on? So then I thought about it. I thought, well, if I think about it and I dig deep, I would say that every other aspect of our relationship is good. But because we've been forced into we'd been forced into this thing where we'd automatically had the initial attraction and everything else was, but we haven't actually, usually friends first, aren't you? Yeah. And so we hadn't had the opportunity to do like fun stuff together and like go on dates and stuff. And I think, and so I said it. And then the more I was talking, the more I was like, but I didn't know she was angry. I did not have a clue that I'd annoyed her. I just thought I'm being open and honest. So then they're like, what do you want to do? So go. I was like, cheers, stay. Yeah, no, so on. And then we walked back. I was just like, you're right. She's just ignoring me. I'm like, what's wrong? And then eventually I realised, well, she walked off, didn't she? But I didn't have a clue. It wasn't until she explained it after.
That was. I mean, Kelly loved the next episode after that, because then that's when Jenna said we had really good sex and swept all our issues under the carpet.
It always works. It always works. Just be a little bit creepy, say you're sorry, and then everything's forgiven. It works every time.
It's the magic wand.
Yeah, exactly.
And once you got over the issue about the belly laughs and all that, you used to sex as medicine. then it was Yes Week, and I've seen a lot of people do exercise half-heartedly, but Jenna's efforts were pretty.
I was absolutely furious. She was shit. She just like, she, and I was just like, it's literally 2% effort rate. It's supposed to be Yes Week. You're supposed to do what I'm saying. But also, I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to tell you this, but she was hanging so bad. So the boxing was on, right, the night before. And so all the lads had got together in Kwame's apartment, I think. And then all the girls had got together in Jess's apartment. I'd been down to see Jenna, she was wasted. And then I went back up and I was like, right, half an hour, and then we need to go to bed, it's got to be up in the morning. And then I got back, went back downstairs. She wasn't there. And so I went into walked to the apartment, and she was fully clothed with her trainers on, asleep on top of the quilt. And she passed out. So I had to go and get a casserole dish because that's all I could find to put it next to the bed. I had to undress and get her in bed. It was horrendous. So we woke up about 5 hours later, and I'm like, right then, circuit training. And she was fuming, furious. I hated it. So that I think that added to it a little bit. I fed on that.
Yeah. Hello, yes week. Come on.
Exactly. So, yeah.
So it sounds like then after kind of yes week and intimacy tasks that you kind of you developed a bit of a stronger bond after, you know, after those couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. I think once we'd faced all of those, we faced quite a lot of arguments and stuff early on. So the biggest hurdles that we had during the whole experiment, I think we faced kind of within the first 3 weeks. And so we were just, once we'd got over those, we were just like one strong team. So mm-hmm. by the time we got to the retreat, we kind of walked in as one, which was very handy because it helped when these confrontations came up. You know that somebody was standing right behind you and had your back.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's what I was going to get to, because that's where the retreat is where things really seem to turn in this series. So it's definitely good that you had, you know, you had each other to support each other.
Yeah, definitely.
What was the vibe there? Like you said about the games when you were answering questions with the lads when you separated off. That definitely seemed a lot more fun than what was going on in the girls group. What was it like more generally? Like, kind of, did people feel that it was in the air, this Matt and Whitney thing?
Oh, I did. I mean, when they were talking about, he said Whitney, didn't he? And then Whitney had said Matt.
Yeah.
I literally had no idea. I remember me and Adrian looked like a couple, and we were just really focusing on each other. But I didn't have any idea. And then there was rumours going around. I think even Matt had said something the next morning. But I didn't really know quite how far it had gone and how big it was. Mm-hmm. I definitely didn't realise that it was a thing. I thought that it was, yeah. So I wasn't expecting that. But people were talking, and I didn't think it was genuine.
You didn't think it was genuine when they were talking about it?
I didn't think that the relationship was genuine. I think that's so what you didn't see at the retreat was I initially was having a conversation with Whitney, and I said that I didn't think that I thought that it was extremely convenient that they'd both formed a relationship a day before they're about to go home. And so that's what in my initial conversation. So whether or not, I mean, they do, when I watch it now, and obviously I see a lot more, I think there's a strong possibility that it was genuine. So that could have been an error on my part. But I think that based on an outsider, I was like, well, you guys are going home in two days. It was on Tuesday. Christmas ceremony is on Thursday. And so I just thought, it's obvious that you're both going to go. And now all of a sudden you like each other when you're the most unlikely match. Like, and then at that point I could hear Matt shouting at Shanita, who's standing right behind me, and I'm talking to Whitney there. And all I can hear is him shouting. So then I was like, who are you talking to? Don't talk to her like that. And that's when me and Matt started having an argument.
Yeah, this is something that really, this is one of the big tweaks actually, was when you said to Matt, this conversation's over.
Yeah.
Because it felt like there was a level of, I don't like the way that Matt talks to people, because he does this thing of saying that he's putting this idea across that he's been reasonable, he's more mature and everything, but it's actually a way of trying to control how the conversation's held.
Yeah, exactly. I think he'd lost his temper, and what I was trying to do is I'm not allowing somebody to speak to me like that. So he was standing over me, and he was trying to intimidate me, and I just thought, well, no, I'm not doing it. And I thought, there's no way you can talk to me if my back's turned to you. So the conversation's done. But he came back over and said, I've calmed down now and I want to have a conversation about it. And I'm good that I didn't show that, because it means he backed down and I didn't show it. but he knew that he'd lost his temper, you know, and I think that he kept it together quite well. But occasionally you do see it creeping out.
Yeah, I always get the feeling with Matt that there's a sense of threat when he's talking to people, which is the thing that I don't, you know, that's the issue I have with the way that he talks to people.
Yeah, I think we just didn't get on. And I think after that, obviously that shot him down. And then at the commitment ceremony, obviously it happened again. But he didn't allow me to talk. So he'd speak to everybody else and then he just wouldn't, which obviously infuriated me.
Yeah. And then, thing of, like when he's saying, I thought it's my time on the couch.
Yeah. Condescending. And how I used to keep my, used to be like, I hated it. It used to drive me insane.
Yeah, I can imagine and we could see it. Did you have any interactions with him when he was still with Gemma? When you say you just didn't get on, or was it just that?
No, he cut my hair. So before we went on the retreat, I went round because he was like, "Oh, Matt's cutting people's hair." I was like, "Oh, is it?" And do you want him to cut yours? And he's like, "Oh, I'll cut your hair." So I went round there, and he said to me when I was getting my hair cut, anyone that says they're not in here for fame is lying. And I remember walking out of there and I was like, that's a funny thing to say. Then when I heard about the Matt and Whitney thing, I thought, well, you said that and now you're forming a relationship with Whitney. Mm-hmm. That's why I didn't think it was genuine. That's mm-hmm. it, cards on the table. That's where it came from. That's where. And, but then, you know, one side, I think it's because I was a female and I shot him down and he was pissed off about it. And then he wouldn't let it go. And then we just, every time we saw each other, we'd fall out.
Yeah. Well, this is it's a shame that because Kelly's got kids and, you know, work commitments at the moment. So she wanted to pass on how much she enjoyed watching your story and everything. But this is exactly where Kelly's good at saying, yeah, the patriarchy, you know, he's a woman hater and all this. So, you know, I'll try my best, but I cannot.
And I think, like, you know, I noticed at the dinner party, and especially when I watched it back, that Kwame called him out and said, I can't remember his line. It was an amazing line, whatever it was. Getting consoled by the woman, man that's taking his woman.
Yeah.
And he said nothing. He sat down and said nothing. Mm. And then as soon as I started talking to Shanita, he shouted. And then it just, you know, that was the difference for me. That was a clear difference and with Gemma. It was any female, he'd have something to say about it. And then it just, I think he got to me and it was the wrong woman. So
that decision-making process that they had with Whitney and Matt, whether they would come back in or not, did you know? I mean, I've spoken to Adrian and he was like, they shouldn't have come back in because we all put loads of effort in.
Yeah.
But realistically, did you know, it's a TV show, they're going to be coming back.
I think I had made, what you didn't see was I went on for quite a while because I thought it was disrespectful to us, obviously disrespected the process, you know, that bit. And then I obviously said to Paul, preaches all the time about, we've given you what you need, not what you want. And you've got two people there that have got what they want and not what they need, which goes against everything that the experiment is. It's not Love Island, you can't just recouple. And it discredits what we've been through and what we've done. And it also, found it disrespectful that the opportunity was given whilst Gemma and Duca were sat there. I thought that was, you know, maybe they should have gone away and then they should have met them separately. You know, Gemma's sat there and I'm sure Duca was upset. But Gemma was also, she was heartbroken. And so for them to say, okay, this is over, do you still want to come back in? Like, I just thought, wow, there's no shame here at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I thought after I'd said everybody had made the points, and also them coming back in would create a very big divide in the group and it would cause nothing but negativity within the group dynamics. So what positive can come of them coming back in apart from more viewers?
Right.
And so, you know, my point was, what is this? Is it an experiment or is it a TV show? Because, you know, but ultimately, it is a TV show, isn't it? You're so caught up in the experiment. You're like, no, but it is a TV show. So obviously going to bring them back in. But I thought they'd gone, because I went down downstairs the next day and they were like, oh, Whitney and Matt have just gone. And I was like, oh, brilliant. But when I was sat at the in the dinner party in the mixer, I remember seeing the cameras moving around and I did a quick head check and head count. So I was like, everyone's in here. And then I was like, and I could see most of the cameras are on my face and the rest of them were on the door. And I thought, oh God. And then those doors came out and I was like, I'm not standing up. I'm not greeting them. So yeah, but I didn't know. I had a suspicion, but didn't know.
This is something I spoke about on the podcast the other day, that, like you say, you didn't stand up and you didn't greet them. In hindsight now and watching it on telly, do you wish you'd have just been like more civil, or do you kind of and just like said, right, I disagree with it, don't like them, but for the sake of trying to get on with the night and making my own life easier, it's easier to be civil? Or do you still think you would have done it the same way?
I would have done it the same. I don't have any, because, and I know that sounds mean, but like the problem, the points that I made weren't about them as a couple. It was about the process, but they made it personal. So yeah. Then by the time that they had gone, it was a personal thing between me, Matt and Whitney. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, so no, I'm not going to, if somebody that wasn't your friend or something you didn't like walked in, you wouldn't greet them because you don't like them. Yeah. So, you know, I would stand by what I believe in. And yeah. I didn't believe that they were people that I wanted to be friends with. Therefore, I don't need to hug them.
Yeah, it's true.
That would be fake. It would be going against something that I believe in. I'm very much a believer of sticking to what you believe in, seeing it through.
I think you and Adrian both said it at that commitment ceremony, that it's like, it's not personal. It's like, could be, I know that you got on with Thomas and Adrian. If they'd have done the same thing, as friendly as you are with them, it's about, these are the rules we've agreed to yeah. for this thing. So let's stick with it. But like yeah. you say, as soon as you say it's not personal, or they just were obviously going to take it as criticism of them, and you know.
Yeah, that's it. And I think it made it easier to express how I felt based on the fact that I didn't get on with them. I'll be honest, it would be hard if Thomas and Adrian or Shanita and Jordan, if that had happened with them, it would have been hard. I would have done it, but my delivery probably would have been different, but I still would have expressed how I felt. Yeah. But they made it easier because I didn't get on with them.
Mm-hmm. You, yeah, I mean? Always makes it easier. So yeah. Try and tie a couple of things together here then. Do you think of yourself as someone who's stubborn?
Yes.
Right, okay.
I am stubborn, definitely.
Because that I agree with you about standing by what you believe in, but the reason I ask that is I'm going to move back to you and Jenna and the homestays.
Yeah.
And I noticed the thing that would happen would be, certainly what we were shown, and again, I know editing can cut out so much stuff, yeah. that you would make up your mind quite quickly about, I'm not moving. I can't, you know, and then a couple of episodes down the line, it would be, you know, I can move halfway, but it seemed like you would make a decision quite quickly. And then
yeah.
that's where you are. That's where you're staying for a while.
Yeah. So that I would say out of all of the show, that was probably the thing that me and Jenna were both like, that wasn't what happened. So we had already had conversations about, I am stubborn, and Jenna would say the same, I'm dead stubborn. But with the homestays, we'd already had conversations that if we moved together, it would be halfway. And I remember when we watched the, when we were in Blackpool, you know, I did say what I said. In an ideal world, Jenna would move to Stafford and my life wouldn't change. Of course I'm going to say that, because ideally, that would be ideal. That would be perfect. But you know, it's obvious that you've got to make some kind of compromise. So my expectation was never that she would move to Stafford. I never expected her to do that. And I never asked her to. It would be that we would both have moved to Manchester and met halfway.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you've had the opportunity to clear that up, because I don't think that was shown really. Because I always wondered, when they were showing those episodes, they would show you saying, well, I'm not moving, I'm staying in Stafford. But they never really showed why. Like, I assume you've got family, you've got friends. Are those the reasons that you wanted to stay there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my friends and family, and I love where I work, which is, you know, has had a huge impact. But all of my friends that watched that episode were like, you were planning to move to Manchester a year or two ago. I was ready to sell up and move to Manchester anyway. So they were like, why are you saying that you want to stay in Stafford when you were going to move to Manchester on your own? I was like, I didn't say that. So, I would stay. My niece and nephew are here. My sister's in Stafford. So there's things to keep me here. But I would definitely be open to move somewhere else. It's not at all. Mm.
So you think that's, well, you've said that's the biggest thing probably in the editing, that they didn't really give a clear narrative of what was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. I think there was a slight bit of editing there, but I don't think it's anything major that's, just made me look like I wanted to stay in Stafford. It's not the end of the world. It could have been worse.
Yeah, it was just kind of confusing because, like I say, it was only then the next episode, it was like moving halfway. It just sort of didn't.
That wasn't the case at all. We both said we'd already spoken about, like, before you get to home stage, you have those kind of conversations anyway. And we both always said we'd like to live in the city and we'd like to move to Manchester. Mm-hmm. It's a very gay friendly place to live, isn't it? So we'd already had those conversations anyway and we just reiterated them. But I think that if they asked me, I mean, I think in the short term, if I was going to move to Blackpool or Stafford, we've both got houses to sell, both got mortgages. It wouldn't be a simple solution. It was both just, mm-hmm. Then I would say, she'd move to Stafford in the meantime.
What's weirder, dildo wind chimes or pickled rat?
Dildo wind chimes.
Please, can you please explain the rat? Because I think that could be an episode by itself.
So I had a friend, and at one Christmas, we agreed to spend £5 on a gift for each other. And we both had to display it in our living room or kitchen. And it had to be the most horrendous thing that you could buy for £5. So I went to a charity shop and got like some statue thing. And it was disgusting. And I was really proud. And then Christmas Eve, we exchanged gifts, gave the statue, and she was really happy to then give me mine, even after seeing the statue. And then when I opened it, it was a pickled rat. But that was about 5 years ago, and I've grown quite attached to it. But then, to be fair, it does need it came to me in this horrible water, and I did hate it for ages. But I can't bring myself to throw it away, which, I'm sure Jenny can appreciate it. So it needs repickling.
If you do end up in Manchester, it's going with you.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be with me forever now.
So moving on then to the final dinner party, coming towards the end of the process. I mean, you've mentioned before how you thought Matt and Whitney had caused a divide in the group. I mean, I've never seen a table more polarised as well.
Yeah, and there was a physical gap as well. There was like a chair in between. There was a physical... I don't know if you could see from the camera angle, but there was... A huge divide, which is strange because I actually, like George and April, I'd go around their apartments. I'd see April on her own, and then Jonathan and Sophie. I mean, I loved Sophie. I've seen Sophie loads since it's been on. We've actually become quite close following it being filmed, which is a shame. But then it was just kind of like Matt and Whitney, I guess. I think since the retreat, that caused the divide. Whereas I think had they not come back in, we still would have been one group, but just one big dysfunctional family.
I've been asking people because I've been sort of, I don't know, again, if Kelly was here, she'd have a go at me for this. But I sort of wonder, is Jonathan all right? Is he just get bogged down in this these ideas that he have? And Jenna gave him a lot of shit at that retreat, which he was right to do. I don't agree with what he's saying.
The frustrating thing is with Jonathan is he shows clear signs of like a lack of education. When you're in such a diverse group, anybody that lacks education, it's you can see it straight away. But he showed an unwillingness to learn. Mm-hmm. So I don't care if somebody accidentally says something, like if somebody said something, I don't know, I don't want to say anything, but you know when somebody says something they don't mean it, but it can come across as like low-key homophobic, but like you're not allowed to really say that anymore. Mm-hmm. But he is the type of person that would be like, oh, you can't say anything these days. Yeah. And that's what I found frustrating, is not necessarily, I can deal with anyone that's got, that says something wrong, that will accept that they said something wrong and will try and make a change. Mm-hmm. But when you show an unwillingness to learn and you shrug your shoulders and roll your eyes, you're going to piss me off. And Jenna's obviously a massive feminist, and she's like, you know, here we go again.
You just wanted him to stop talking about it just so you can have a nice meal.
Yeah, but I'd always say hello to him, like, you know, the dinner parties and stuff. I'd always kind of go over and say hello. I don't think he's like, it's a difficult one. Jenna would murder me, do you know what I'm saying? That, but don't, like, he's, you know, I think he's from like a very small kind of village place, what I imagine. Yeah, where all the people are the same.
Yeah, yeah. I'd said this on the podcast that I wonder, you've kind of summed it up, that he's, you know, oh God, you can't say anything anymore. You can, yeah. you can say what you want, but people can also say that you're talking shit, and you know.
Yeah, that's it.
That final dinner party where everything was divided, were you, being as close as you were to Thomas and Adrian, was that difficult, them deciding to call it there?
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult, and I suppose they'd been... There was do you remember the lads and the girls there?
Yeah.
So I remember Jenna came back, we filmed her coming back, and we both had a catch up. And I explained what Adrian said his home stay was like. And then Jenna came out with a completely different story, that Thomas had basically checked out. His mom and dad said that he should drop it. And I was like, completely blown away. And I also thought, is he blindsiding Adrian, and is he planning to go to the commitment ceremony and say, I'm not interested, I want to leave, and then Adrian's going to say stay because he has no idea that he's feeling this way. Mm-hmm. And then Thomas then, and so I was just like, I felt, and so when we finished, I said, I need to go speak to Adrian, I need to speak to him, because I don't think it's not going to be a nice experience for him tomorrow, and it's not fair of me to know this information. Adrian is like my favorite person. Mm-hmm. I need to tell him. And so that's why they sat us down the next day, so you'll see when we did the like the deliberations the next day, I then told him.
Sorry, I did see that. And just an interesting note about that. Why did they decide to sit you in front of some like shipping containers on the street? It was a bit weird.
So they, those shipping containers they're actually like self-contained little like cabins. And when you get to set, you all pull up in the cars and they split you up. And so you have to have like sometimes 15 different places for people to sit. So we were all allocated different containers. So we were just in a container together. Right. And then they brought us out and made us sit in front of it. So I think the handy thing is with that set is there was loads of different little rooms.
Right, right. Okay. I just thought, this is so weird. It's also well produced. And it's just like, I don't know, just the street.
Yeah. I know. It's a terrible, terrible angle.
So it was really emotive that when Thomas and Adrian split up, and then they came back in, and it's edited in with all the other end of the table rolling their eyes and things like that. Did you get that vibe at the moment that was happening?
That's exactly how it was. That's exactly how it was. You know, there was sometimes when Thomas said stuff and I was like, oh, like sometimes he's had a few drinks and he's looking around the room thinking, right, come at me, bro. He's ready. And so then, you know, it's difficult to back him when you're just like, oh, you're just, why are you, just drop it.
Yeah.
But when he came in, you know, and it just, there was a lot of tension. And I think that Adrian had a lot of unsaid things, that he had a lot of anger from the last commitment ceremony because Matt called him out and said that his relationship wasn't genuine. And I think Adrian was still angry. So Adrian actually came in ready for Matt, I think, that day.
Yeah.
But there was just a clear animosity.
Mm. Yeah, well, speaking to Adrian, I said, I brought that up, like saying, was it something you were going to say anyway, or was it because of the emotions of what had happened with Thomas and everything? And it seemed like it had been playing on his mind, because I've said every time, it's ridiculous to say that their relationship was fabricated. Like, good or bad, it was obviously a genuine thing that they were trying to do. We were so invested in their relationship, as we were with yours and Jenna's, as we are with yours and Jenna's. We'll cover it both ways. We're not.
It was really sad that they, but also, what it wasn't like we had to live without them, because when them they went home after the dinner party, but we all moved out of the apartment still on the same day. So even though they didn't go back for vow renewals, it didn't make any difference to our experience and the experiment too much, because we were all moving out of the apartments the next day anyway. We'd mm-hmm. all just had to go home, and then we had to come back for vow renewals.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the dynamics naturally changed when, like, Jess and PJ left, and then Richie and Laura went, and then especially when Keisha and Kwame, you felt like a whole... Keisha right. and Kwame was a big hit for me. I remember I really felt it. But you didn't have that with Thompson Asia because we were all going home anyway, so it's just like...
Why Keisha and Kwame?
They were just a big part of the experiment, I think, for both Jenna and I guess. But we'd go around there quite a lot. Keisha would just come and knock on the door. She'd just come in and have some drinks with us. She always had food on the go. I'd always just go and knock on and just go for some food. And we had loads of parties there, and we actually spent quite a lot of time, Keisha and Kwame's.
Right.
But you just don't see that. But we were very close. So when they went, it was really sad. It was really upsetting. I mean, I had a lump in my throat in case she was talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really sad to see them go. And the next day when you woke up and you go to walk to the apartment, you're like, oh, she's not there. It's like they've died because they just go, and then you haven't got a phone. You can't contact them.
I mean, it's not like they've died.
Rest in peace. Just deadlock their relationship. That's what it feels like, though, if somebody goes, because you can't, they've just gone.
Yeah. Well,
it's a bit dramatic, a little bit. Just a little bit dramatic.
Some of these people I think might have rubbed off on you in terms of the drama.
Yeah, well, no, this is it. I mean, week five, the gloves were off, it's kicking off on everyone, wasn't I? And that was off.
So when you left the apartments, You've gone back to make your deliberations. Did you really have to consider what you were doing? Because, like, when I was watching those final vows with you and Jenna, the music and everything, the way they'd edited it, and the cut to the break, I was like, oh my God, this is like, I can't believe. Yeah. And I know they edit it that way. But were your deliberations hard?
I mean, even when I watched them, I was thinking, did I dump her though? Like, the tension. I was like, my heart was like this, thinking, wow, that's crazy. Yeah. I think you obviously do consider, I'm not saying that, you know, it was an option of not doing the vow renewals. I was never going to go and be like, this isn't for me. You do genuinely consider whether or not you are about to go back into normal life, and you have got to consider all of the factors that could compromise your relationship, like the kids thing and, the kids thing really, and the fact she's vegan. But you do have to consider all the things that the journey as a whole, and whether or not we actually had a little bit of an argument, which no one knows. It was at one of the dinner parties, but I was trying to say that, like, it could be that we've been forced into this experiment, and you're all holding on to each other because, like, you need that person. You're just like going through this crazy thing together. That what about when you go back to your normal life? What about if you don't miss each other? What about if life just goes back to normal and you go back to your life without that person in, and you don't miss them? It's always a possibility, and you don't, because the experiment's so unique, you never know how you're going to feel when you get out. That was my fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to go home and spend a few days and not talk to Jenna to see whether or not I missed her. So you do consider it, I guess.
Yeah, and you obviously did miss her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So well, she?
The kids issue, this is the one I'm almost not sure how to even ask about this, because to me that seems like too big a topic for, and the experiment is unique, but I'd said before in a podcast, you just need to be out and in a normal relationship, because you wouldn't be talking about kids after, as intense as it is and as much time as you're spending together, you just wouldn't be talking about kids after 2 months.
Yeah, and yet they do spark, you know, conversations off. Because when you go to the vow renewals, you have to take it seriously in the fact that, like, you are making a commitment to that person. But really, it was a difficult one because Jenna never really said no. I never really said 100%. But then equally, I don't want to be with somebody for 3 years and then be like, oh, she'll be like, oh, it's a definite no now. I'm like, oh, brilliant. I'm always a definite yes. But it's a difficult subject to you know, why can't you just enjoy each other for a little bit? But towards the end of the experiment, they want the what's next. We want something really dramatic, like we want you to have a baby or get married for real. You naturally do start thinking about what your long-term plans are, because, you know, I'm not 18. And I think if I am going to commit to somebody, then we've got to both be in the same place. Then the vow renewals is making a commitment that you're going to be in a relationship. And so if I'm not wasting my time, do you know what I mean? To put it blunt, you can't. I'm not, you know, I'm 31. So I don't want to be with somebody for a year and then they don't want kids and I really do. Or they're going to stay in Blackpool and I'm going to stay in Stafford. You have got to consider those things, because otherwise we're both wasting our time.
Yeah.
And those subjects are going to come up at one point or another. And even though you haven't been together for that long, it is very intense and it feels like a long time.
What was your highest point, do you think, in the whole process? Was it the wedding day? Or?
The retreat, I would say. I think that I know I had the arguments, but prior to, well, actually after the dinner party, I remember, because we had this amazing room and we'd got over all of our stuff and we were in a really, really good place. And we had like this big balcony thing, and we, Shania and Jordan and Jenna, we all just lay out there. We stole 2 bottles of Prosecco. And then we went and we just drank Prosecco and just lay there just looking up, and we had this music on. It was the most amazing night of the whole experiment for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Plus, it was so nice. The weather was amazing. Everyone was really happy, apart from the dinner party. But yeah, I had an amazing time. We actually played a game of basketball, you know, that you didn't see. And I did a backwards shot and it went in.
I've heard Kwame brought this up. And he said it was an amazing, amazing game of basketball. He spoke about that, about you doing the backwards shot, and that everyone was cheering, everyone was getting involved and stuff. But then I spoke about it with Adrian, and Adrian's recollection of it was that it was a really toxic testosterone fuel.
I've never seen, like, so we were all going to play basketball and I was like, oh yeah, I'm here for this. Like, you know, just slipped into lesbian mode. And then they threw the ball in. And I've never felt like such a girly female in my life. They were barging out of the way. Jordan hit my arm. I was like, ow, Jordan, you just hit my arm. I was fuming. And me and Adrian just literally held each other for the whole thing. They like threw it to us out of sympathy. You know, you've always got that one person that they're like, oh, like the person you pick last on the team. I had like a sympathy throw, which I didn't want to do. And then at the end, I was like, well, let's do, I was like, so there's a penalty. So I took it backwards and it went in, but it ended amazingly because the thing went in, everyone picked me off. I was the hero. It's great.
As we're recording this, the reunion dinner party is going to be on in about an hour.
Yeah.
And then we've got the reunion commitment ceremony tomorrow night. What can we expect?
I would say, I mean, the dinner party was aggressive. It was started off very quiet and it turned into the most explosive party to date. It was nasty. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of aggression. A lot of people had gone home. And they'd all been talking, oh, did you know this person said this? Did you know that person said that? And everyone was waiting for their opportunity to come back and speak on what had happened and what they'd heard. And it was a lot. It's a lot.
Do you think it's going to be, I mean, it's on at 8 o'clock. It's, you know.
Yeah, I'll be very surprised if it's a true reflection of what happened. In fact, I know it won't be, I don't think. It's good. Well, right. They can't swear. And I think they'll cut it. I'll be gutted if they do, because there's a lot of things that happened on that night that I think people need to be exposed for.
Right. Okay. You think that, and again, something I've heard from other people that the edit has been kind to some people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that if people behave in certain ways, then it should be a true reflection rather than, I think that people are being protected.
Wow.
Personally.
Overall, worthwhile process?
Yeah. I mean, it was the most amazing thing I've ever done. It was like incredibly stressful. But I made friends that are that I know will be with me forever. And, you know, potentially could have given me a little bit. I could have made, I've had messages on Instagram where, you know, people have been like scared to come out and stuff like that. And so even if I've had like a bit of a platform where I've helped somebody or some people, then I've made a little bit of a change, which was one of the factors that went into going, exposing yourself and making yourself vulnerable on TV. So, yeah.
Oh, wow, well, yeah. Happy. Yeah, I'm not surprised that would make you happy. And we, you know, you've made us happy watching you. It's been really entertaining throughout. I mean, like I say, it's been nice just to see a sort of an actual couple and actual issues, because you kind of need that. It can't just be drama
yeah.
all the time. We're actually, you know, you want to root for people, and you and Jenna were the one of the couples that we definitely wanted things to go well for. So as I say, I guess I'm going to find out in about 55 minutes.
You will.
Well, thank you so much, Zoe. Thank you
for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.